So, Julian, you've got an Australian accent, but you don't have an Australian name, or not a WASHBIS name anyway.
Well, my father was Romanian. He came out after the Second World War as a political refugee from Romania.
And so tell me a bit about your family background.
Well, as I said, my father was a barrister in Romania and was on the Russian front during the Second World War and received a number of decorations then and refused to join the Communist Party. So he essentially was going to be imprisoned and escaped in a small boat to Turkey and made his way to France, where he then came to Australia. He always said to me, "Always choose to live in a country where you can be free." He said, "Always choose liberty." And I think that's influenced my decisions about my job and probably my approach to bioethics quite a lot. He also paid a very high price for that choice because he could have had a very nice life with connections in France, but he worked as a factory worker at International Harvester in Australia and had a very difficult life. My mother, on the other hand, on her father's side, one of the great grandparents came on the First Fleet. And on the other side of the family, on her mother's side, it's rumoured that her grandfather was an Aborigine. So I've got a very mixed background there with some real Australians and some convicts and some escapees from Romania.
So they both had tough backgrounds, but you were expected to go to university.
Yeah, there's a very strong expectation in those days that children, and indeed my parents, worked to send me to a private school so that I would have the opportunity to go to university, and it was always expected. My father was a very educated man, had a lot of books in the house, and there was always the expectation that I would go to university.
And you studied medicine.
Yeah, I didn't know what to do. So somebody said, "If you don't know what to do, study medicine." I found it rather boring at that point, although I went on to enjoy it more later on. I was thinking of changing, and in fact, we could do a fifth subject, and I did philosophy, and I studied practical ethics that Peter Singer was running, and I found this enormously exciting. And I remember hearing this guy talking rationally and giving arguments and not just dogma or ideology about abortion and the treatment of animals and euthanasia. And I found this really one of the most exciting university experiences. I was later to go back and study with Peter, but I continued on, finished my medical degree, and worked as a doctor.
So Peter Singer is obviously about the most well-known philosopher in the world. That's not hyperbole to say that. Would you call yourself a Peter Singer disciple?
I wouldn't like to be a disciple of anyone or anything, except maybe the Judas. I'm enormously impressed by Peter, and I think that he's shaped the sort of goals I have in the sort of work that I do. First of all, he's got a razor-sharp mind. He has the sort of integrity and the ability to go where the logic of an argument leads, and I think that he's open to logical and rational challenge. But the other thing that I try a little bit to do is Peter is an amazing communicator of arguments and ideas, and he uses a lot of devices that are literary, really, in nature. And he really has an ability to tell a story, to essentially write something that's midway between a philosophical article and a short story. I also wanted to be a writer and at one point wanted to make films, and I think that you can be creative. And I think Peter is not only one of the best minds, but also one of the most creative communicators.
And Peter Singer was one reason why you gave up medicine and you moved into philosophy. Tell us a bit about that.
Well, I was working as a junior doctor, and I started doing a master's course while I was working in bioethics with Peter and Justin Oakley at the Centre for Human Bioethics in Monash. I really enjoyed this. And I decided, again, I think this was inspired a little bit by my father and his sense of freedom and his desire to do what he wanted to do, to have a break from medicine. And I was always expected to specialise. I was going to do neurology, but I decided to defer that training, the specialist training, for 3 years while I did a PhD, just for fun. People ridiculed and mocked me. And they said, "What are you giving up a good career to sort of do this funny philosophy stuff?" And the only issues that were going on at that point were really around euthanasia and perhaps a little bit of resource allocation. So I did my PhD on Good Reasons to Die. But fortunately for me, the sort of genetics revolution took off, and later on I was in a position where I had both a bioethics PhD with Peter and also a medical degree, and I was rather in a niche market.
And then you came to study at Oxford for a short period before returning to Melbourne, is that correct?
Yeah, I had a Sir Robert Menzies medical scholarship, and I had the good fortune and opportunity to do a postdoc here that ended up being 3 years with Derek Parfitt. And I also did some clinical ethics here. So I spent 3 years essentially as a postdoc in Oxford before going back to a 6-year Logan Research Fellowship at Monash University, which after 1 year I moved to head up a new ethics of genetics unit at the Murdoch Children's Research Institute, a research institute funded by Dame Elizabeth Murdoch, where I ran supposedly one of the world's first ethics of genetics programs.
And that brings us almost up to date, which is the Uhiro Centre for Practical Ethics in Oxford. How did that come about?
Well, things were going very well in Melbourne, and we really built up a good program. But then this job was advertised in Oxford, and you know, sometimes you have to take these windows of opportunity while they're there. I always wanted to come back and spend some time in Oxford. So I applied and was lucky enough to get that job when I was 37 and have been here since then for the last 9 years, nearly 10 years.
And when you first came here, you were the centre. I mean, now it's a flourishing and growing institution.
Well, that's true. I mean, Jonathan Glover had been here carving out applied ethics, really, but he'd moved on at that point. And there was really just me entirely devoted to applied ethics. And I remember him saying, it's great to see that Oxford is taking applied ethics seriously. But it was a kind of long slog. We were lucky to get some Uhiro funding to kickstart the centre and bring some young people. And now we've got, you know, I think a really good group of young people, and it's the young people, I think, that are the life of a centre or an academic institution.
And it's obviously a very cutting-edge and flourishing area of academia, and it combines both your interests in philosophy and in medicine. Do you miss the medical side of things?
Yeah, I miss medicine. When you do medicine, you see an aspect of life that very few people ever see. If you do it well, it really is an algorithm that you punch out. And I didn't enjoy the algorithmic nature, the kind of service delivery nature of medicine. You lack a fair degree of autonomy, but I do miss the contact with real human experience and life. But you can't do two jobs today at the same time.
You've published literally hundreds of articles, I think. Is there any way one could sum up the kinds of areas that they cover?
Not really. I mean, I guess you could say that I tried to look at radical advances in technology and the things that are confronting society and the stories that are associated with those. But I don't have a defined point that I'm aiming for. I do things as they come up, as they seem relevant, opportunistically. So I don't have any magnum opus, and I will at some point in the medium term produce a book or two books bringing together the major themes of the work. But so far, it's really been doing a job of writing in response to issues or writing in response to opportunity.
People talk about the Parfittian approach to things, and they talk about a Singer-esque approach to things. Is there a Savulescu approach to things?
I guess if you had to sort of characterise my approach, it's really a common sense, pragmatic approach. So I try to really just capture the reasons that I see just that are based on ordinary morality and ordinary values and ordinary patterns of consistency. So I would say, like, I just have an ordinary Australian approach to bioethics.
So you're an Australian with a Romanian father, educated in Oxford and Australia, with a medical background, now living in England. If you had to tick boxes defining yourself, what would the first boxes be?
Well, I think that, you know, I am an Australian and I will always be Australian. I've been here a total of probably 12 years and I still don't have the slightest hint of an English accent, and I never will. I'm an Australian. I love Australia. I miss Australia. But I think that today people can be international citizens, and I see that I've got, you know, an international life. But, you know, I think first and foremost, I will be Australian. And some people manage to assimilate very quickly and become English, but I'm not one of them.
Julian Savulescu, thank you very much.